Employees everywhere, it seems, are seeking flexible work hours. They want it to juggle work commitments with family responsibilities or volunteer work. Others want to juggle it with the transition to retirement. But those flexible work hours often put a lot of pressure on management, who fear that it may hurt productivity. Now comes the FlexiWork Savings Calculator, which is an online tool which calculates the impact of offering greater workplace flexibility. To tell us more, I'm joined by Tanya Smith, who helped design the NOUS FlexiWork Savings Calculator. She's with me on the line from Melbourne. Tanya, welcome to Best Practice.
Thank you very much, Richard.
What exactly does the calculator do?
We call it Felix for short. That might make it a little bit easy to wrap the tongue around. Felix, the flexible workplace calculator, it allows organisations to plug in some pretty basic information about the organisation and on the basis of a few survey questions then come up with a figure that shows how much costs are being saved by having introduced flexible work arrangements in that organisation.
Does it give you a number on what you're going to lose in terms of productivity or contribution?
It does. So the main variables it looks at are productivity and recruitment and retention. So they're the big things that are affected by workplace flexibility, according to the analysis that we've done. And so what it does is translate that into a dollar figure. So you can determine to what extent are you saving money by not having to recruit a lot more people because you're retaining them at higher levels, or what money are you saving by getting more productivity out of your workforce, more productivity that's flowing from people's satisfaction with being able to work flexibly. So really this makes the case for the introduction of flexible work arrangements, not just because it might make people feel better about themselves or their organisation, but because it actually does benefit the bottom line.
In fact, we talked to a firm in New Zealand earlier this year on the show where they've gone to a four-day week and managed to not lose any productivity. So it's possible, and I guess things like recruitment and retention are important in that too. So how did the calculator come about?
So its origins are in a great project that NOUS was commissioned to run towards the end of last year by Women Victoria, which is an office within the Victorian government. And they wanted to test the hypothesis of whether introducing flexible work arrangement does actually boost your bottom line. And their reasons for wanting to test this hypothesis is that they wanted to see a greater uptake of flexible work practices in businesses and organisations around the state as a broader contribution to promoting gender equity. And so they asked us to have a look at a few case study organisations and see if we could come up with a cost-benefit analysis model that would quantify the benefits that do flow from flexible work arrangements. So we picked three case study organisations. One was a government department, one was a hospital, and one was a water and sewage service utility in regional Victoria. And so they're quite different organisations, and they're also at different stages of their own journey to introduce flexible work practices. So they weren't all exemplar organisations. A couple of them that we looked at were, but we also wanted to make sure that we were capturing those organisations that were still, you know, at the early stages of trying different workplace practices that were more flexible. And so we had a look at the literature to figure out, well, how do we, first of all, define different flexible work practices? How are we going to ensure that we were measuring quite specific and different things?
Well, actually, that's much more complicated than I imagined. There's about 10 different things, aren't there?
Well, yes. According to from what we could tell, there are 10 quite distinct types of flexible work arrangements. And interestingly, if you talk to employees, they don't necessarily think of them such arrangements as being flexible. It's like in some organisations, for example, part-time work is so common, people wouldn't necessarily see that as a flexible work offering. But that was certainly one of our 10. Others would include things like purchased leave, Where you get to work, you know, say you have 8 weeks leave instead of four.
This is the 48-52 people often call it.
Yeah, that sort of thing. There's the compressed working hours that you talked about with the New Zealand example. There's also extended parental leave, so beyond the statutory obligations, a lot of organisations provide more generous paternity or maternity leave provisions. There's flex time, of course, there's job sharing. We also look at things like flexible career management, where you can take breaks from work, and it might not be related to long service leave or maternity leave or something like that, but you just want a study break or some sort of career change. So we counted that as an example. And the big one, of course, is working from home or telecommuting.
All right. That's a kind of sample of the 10 different forms. Mm. We've already touched on the things that you look at, which is direct labour productivity, recruitment and retention, absenteeism, which I don't think we talked about, but is clearly something that's affected by this. What are some of the problems? Because this isn't cost-free, offering flexibility. What are some of the problems you detected with these flexible working hours?
Well, we thought of them in terms of costs. So when we're thinking of a balance between costs and benefits, on the cost side, there's infrastructure costs. So if you can imagine you've got more part-time staff, that means you typically need more office space to accommodate them. Unless you've got a sort of rigid hot desking policy, then the assumption is that you're going to need more office space. You're also going to need more corporate staff to support those extra employees, because you've got more people to onboard, more people to train, more people to lend IT support to, that sort of thing. There's also the costs around the time it takes for managers to work with a larger number of employees, or to work with employees who aren't necessarily co-located with them. And there's things like just having the right sort of managerial capability to operate with a more flexible team, and also to manage their own flexibility as well if they're taking advantage of some of these options.
There's at least three streams, aren't there? That infrastructure, implementation, management cost. All right. So what were your findings, you know, in a nutshell? Is it worthwhile?
Well, the findings were all positive, I'm pleased to say, and that's based on some assumptions in our model that were fairly conservative. So when we looked at figuring out, well, when somebody says they're a lot more productive, what does that mean in a quantified way? And the literature said, well, that often means there's a 20% lift in productivity. We rounded that down to about 15%, just to be on the safe side. So notwithstanding those fairly conservative assumptions, we got positive results in our cost-benefit analysis for our three main case study organisations, and they were quite significant, particularly for those where, as you would expect, there was a wide range of flexible work options available and where it had really been embedded for a while and so it had infused the culture. So, for an example, the Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning that we looked at, we determined that they save about $31 million a year as a result of having flexible work arrangements in place. For Mercy Health, the hospital that we looked at, they were saving $23 million a year. For One and Water, it was more marginal. It's only about $150,000 a year, but they were one of the organisations that were just starting out in trialling flexible work practices. And they're a relatively smaller organisation as well, with some 200 employees.
So, Tanya, what's the aim of the – what do you want to happen with this tool? Is this something that you want people to use, to come to you and say we would like to use it, or what?
Well, we'd love for people to have a go at putting in their own data. The tool does ask for a lot of fairly basic and easily accessible administrative data about the organisation, and then it asks you to input answers to about 8 survey questions. They're very straightforward. Once the organisation's done that, they can find out for themselves how much costs or how many dollars they're saving per year and what that looks like over time as a result of flexible work arrangements. And that might inform both how they go about trying to improve that cost saving by perhaps pushing a little bit further with some their flexible work policies. The other advantage too is that we hope other organisations will see these results or hear about these results and think, oh, maybe it's a good thing for us to do too. Maybe we should explore some other flexible work options and be a little bit more open to that way of working rather than assume that it's going to be a cost burden.
So if people are interested listening now, where can they find it?
So it's on our website, so nowstgroup.com.au. It's also on the Women Victoria website. I would stress that it gives you a rough indication of the sorts of costs that you might save, but there's opportunities, of course, to do much more granular analysis and pull more insights out of it. And, of course, we'd be happy to talk to anybody about how or whether they would like to do that.
It's always good to have some metrics and numbers, I think. Tanya, thank you very much for joining me on Best Practice.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Tanya Smith is with consultancy firm The Nous Group. And that's it for this week. Best Practice is produced by Murata Dias. Our sound engineer is Andrei Shobanov. I'm Richard Adie.